Hello, and welcome to Bring Your Own Popcorn.
Let us preach to your choir or stoke your ire as we spiral down memory lane with cult classics, Jurassics, and other genres that rhyme with traffic. What we lack in education, we make up for with comedy, compassion, and camaraderie.
I'm your host, Mixtape Majesty, here today with a hilarious comedian, a lover and hater of movies, self-described human equivalent of a Jigglypuff, multi-celled organism who has discovered her mouth is used for more than just eating and stuff, future podcast host and lovely human being, please welcome Adriana McCain.
Hello! I gave you too many suggestions for stupid shit to introduce me with. Oh no.
No, I think it was one of the best introductions we've ever had. We already have so much information on you. It's wonderful.
I know. And yet it reveals actually truly nothing about me, which
that's
is
okay.
On the internet, that's preferable. I'm fine with that.
Well, we're about to dive a little bit deeper as we get to know you with a little list of questions here to learn about what kind of movie watcher you are and the whole history of your experience with movies. So our first question here is, what was the first movie that you remember seeing in movie theaters?
I had to call my mom for this one.
Perfect.
I had to stop and think about it. And then when I talked to my mom, she was like, I don't remember. She was like, I wasn't one of those parents that wrote everything down. Aww. I had to work. And I'm like, okay, fine. That's great. So there's chunks of my lore that are lost to antiquity. All of that is to say is that I think the first movie that I saw in theaters was Hercules.
Do you remember seeing it at all?
I remember the Hydra scene, I think, is really distinct in my memory. You know what? Now that I think about it, my local movie theater, like during the summers, would show movies that had already come out. That may not be the first movie that I actually saw. So I'm going to say it's either Hercules or Mulan. I was like, okay, I remember seeing Mulan and I remember seeing Muppets from Space.
Hell yeah.
Muppets from Space is a fucking banger. That's not the movie that we're talking about today, but I just want to shout the fuck out to Muppets from Space because the soundtrack also slaps harder than anybody spiking a volleyball. It's so good.
What's the first experience you like vividly remember of being in a movie theater?
It was probably Mulan. I remember being in the theater with my mom and my brother. My mom was really into putting the popcorn in like paper tray things that they have. And then she also introduced me to put M&Ms in the popcorn. She's like, just try it. Ooh. Just trust me on this one. You know, I would eat it. I'd be like, oh my God, this is incredible. I love movie theater popcorn so fucking much.
Same.
It's so good. It was the thing during lockdown that I missed the most. Like I missed my family. I missed being able to go out and see my friends, whatnot. Sure. Mm-hmm. I fucking missed movie theater popcorn because I can call my family on the phone. I cannot call movie theater popcorn. It's not the same.
I actually have a life hack for that because I worked in a movie theater. And so I got to see the ingredients that they use that make it taste like that specific way. Mm-hmm. And the secret is it's usually popped in a blend of coconut oil and like some other oils. So if you make it at home on a stovetop with coconut oil and like canola oil, the buttery topping is actually soybean oil again. And for some reason, it tastes like butter. If you ever want to make it at home.
Wow. I'm going to have to do that. I'm a big fan of throwing it in the microwave, but that's going to have to be the way to do it. But yeah, so Mulan, that was the one where I can remember sitting in the theater, watching all of the song sequences and just really like loving the heck out of it and seeing how it like looked on the big screen. And I also remember like the ending sequence with, I think it's the Backstreet Boys that does like the last song.
Oh, I don't remember.
Yeah. Heart, you must be true to your heart. It's such a good song. It was great. It was awesome. It was like
98 degrees. That's who it was.
It was 98 degrees. Wow. The one that I always forget about.
Yeah, same.
Sorry, Nick Lachey. It's such a good movie. I remember seeing that and I remember seeing Muppets from Space. That's a super vivid memory. We went and saw it like in a matinee showing. And I think it was like the first Muppets movie that I had really seen I was conscious of. It was awesome. And like I said, that soundtrack is so good. It has no business being that great. I haven't seen like Muppet Treasure Island or like Muppets Take Manhattan. For somebody who like loves the Muppets as much as I do. That is such a sacrilegious thing for me to admit. And I'm yeah. very nervous actually about this being on the record.
Treasure Island is great. Treasure Island is the one that I saw the most as a kid.
I think there's also The Great Muppet Caper. Haven't seen that one either. There's a lot of holes I need to patch in my Muppet viewing history. But yeah, so I would say those are the big three of movies that I remember seeing when I was but a wee lass.
What was the first movie that you saw in theaters without any supervising adults?
So this is another one where I was like, I had to ask my mom.
Yeah.
And I was like, do you know? She was like, no. Again, she doesn't write anything down. She loves her children. I just want to put that out on the record.
For but sure.
She owned her own business. So that makes sentimentality very hard to pull off. So I had to have been in middle school for sure. My mom is Mexican. And so she like the Latinx experience. You've got that parent that's like, I'm sorry, you want to do what with who? I don't know them. Where are their parents? What are their parents' names? Mm-hmm. Like, are they going to do something to my kid? No, you can't go do that. Absolutely not. You can do right. whatever with your cousin. I'm like, I don't care about that. I know her mom. I know where she lives, but this person, absolutely not. So yeah. I didn't. And for the record too, my mom's second generation Mexican American. And so she mm-hmm. like, she was a lot more chill about a lot of stuff than like her mom would have been, but she mm-hmm. still was very much like, no, you absolutely, I don't care that you're 10. You're not going to go and see this movie by yourself. Absolutely right. not. So I had to have been in middle school. I think the most probable answer is going to have to be Twilight. I really do think that might have been the first movie that I saw by myself without parental supervision.
That makes sense. I feel like that's probably true for a lot of people.
I think so too. I think part of it is like Twilight was such just a cultural moment. There's no way that somebody didn't go and see that. It very much is a movie that any parent of an early teenager would be like, I'm not wasting an hour and a half of my precious life watching this.
Yes,
like
exactly.
Hell no. And I don't entirely blame them. That being said, I think I have seen all of the Twilight movies at this point. Having watched the rest of them, I can say that that's not a bad decision on parents' parts, because those movies aren't good. But Twilight, like the first one out of all of them, surprisingly is the best.
Okay. Good to know. I haven't seen any of them.
It's at this point, it's not worth it. You can absorb enough about Twilight, I think, through cultural osmosis to be fine. You're going to be end up wasting like 9 hours of your precious one wild little life on these movies that simply aren't very good.
Yeah.
And it's really too bad, because I think that vampires as a genre are like, they're pretty cool. One of my favorite TV shows is What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, hell yeah.
Hell yeah. I love in the movie too.
The movie, yeah.
So fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
Vampires as a genre, it kind of like, okay, yeah. I think that Twilight made it both sexy, but also very mockable
mm-hmm.
in the this time era, because I think vampires have always kind of been like sexy, but especially with like Interview with the Vampire.
Yeah.
That movie is too horny. It's way too horny, and it rocks, but it's excessive.
Yeah.
It rocks, but it's like, whoa. And I love that Anne Rice, like till her dying breath, was like, they're not gay. Everybody's like, okay, Anne, all right. Do you need me to go and get your pudding now? Cause all right, grandma.
Yeah.
Twilight, it made it really mockable, I think, as a genre. I think also too that it has so much to do with like, this is a movie for girls. Teenage girls, everything that they like is stupid. It's like, you know, teenage girls basically invented the Beatles, but okay, fucking whatever.
Yeah.
But on top of that, it made this really weird lasting impact on like Robert Pattinson and Kristen Stewart's careers. Now they're taken a little more seriously, but like when it was first announced like a couple of years ago that Robert Pattinson was going to be playing Batman, like a lot of people were like,
you're gonna have Edward Cullen be Batman?
Yeah.
What? That's so stupid.
And it's like, hey, bud, he's been in other stuff. Like, yeah. Have you not seen The Lighthouse? Have you not seen Good Time? Have you not seen, I think it's called like Cosmopolis? Like, he was in a bunch of shit that, like,
yeah.
And was really good doing it. But the haters out there kept insisting, but he did Twilight.
I think you make a really good point. Like, the reason those haters were hating so much isn't because they thought Twilight was a bad movie so much as they knew that it was something teen girls loved. And people just love to shit on what teen girls love.
They really do. And it's too bad. Yeah. And you know what? It's really not fair because there's a lot about Twilight that is justifiably hateable. They're like the way that they portray heterosexual relationships on screen is absolutely fucking nuts.
Yeah.
Like that is, I think, something that we can have a conversation about, or like how Bella's entire existence, her importance really just kind of boils down to like what boy she's going to pick.
Mm-hmm.
There's shit about Twilight that's worth hating. That's not just like girl like thing. That's so dumb. Girl dumb. Hate it. But yeah, Kristen Stewart, I watched Spencer recently. Holy shit. She's so good. They're both like super good.
I think it was also very healing for that whole like the toxic heteronormativity of Twilight. It was very healing for Kristen Stewart to end up being gay. Like,
yeah, definitely. The way that her and Robert Pattinson's relationship were treated in like media, it's like, oh, they fell in love and look, these straight people from the straight people movie and oh no, she's gone and she cheated on him. For her to be like on Saturday Night Live years later after all of this frankly heterosexual nonsense, for her to just be like, hey, I'm actually like so gay, I'm like, this is a win for everybody. Mostly me. This rocks.
The nation was healed that
the
day.
Nation really was healed when Kristen Stewart during her monologue called herself super gay.
I'm like, so gay, dude.
The nation is healing simply from that. We need her to come back and say that she's super gay. Again, we
come
need
out
it.
Again.
Or we need Robert Pattinson to do that.
Oh, that'd be great.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to happen. People are allowed to be straight. That's cool. Whatever.
I guess.
That's fine.
They got a couple more years.
Yeah. And then the...
the gay apocalypse.
I was going to say that the Antifa left is going to outlaw heterosexuality.
Yeah.
This is the future Joe Biden wants. Don't edit this out.
I wish. Yeah. I wish that's what he wanted. Well, what is one of your favorite movies of all time and why?
I want to talk about one movie that I really, really do love, which is Knives Out.
Oh,
ooh,
nice.
Mama, I love that movie so much. It's so good. I have never really realized how much of a whodunit type enjoyer I am. Like, I was never into Agatha Christie novels or like any of the kind of like mystery things. I liked Sherlock when it was on, but I watched Knives Out in the theaters twice. I saw it twice.
Nice.
The first time that I watched it, I showed up with my best friend and her siblings, and we had gotten pretty stoned and we were late to it, which is not ideal. It's also not, it was an interesting way to watch the movie for the first time.
Yeah.
Because the entire time I was like, okay, they showed us what happened through Marta's eyes, but like, I don't know if I believe her. Like, yeah. I was just kind of inventing this kind of, well, what if, you know, what if it turns out everything that she said is actually fake? She's lying about all of this after all, or she's not saying something, or, you know, not a great way to watch that movie is distrusting the very lovely main character. That movie put Ana de Armas on our fucking radars, man. And she's great. I love that.
True.
I love that Bratz doll who became a woman. It's very, she's so cute and she's good at what she does.
Yeah.
I say that positively, by the way. That wasn't derogatory.
Yeah,
she kind of looks like a Bratz doll, but like in a really good way.
She's gorgeous.
My mom never let me have any Bratz dolls, fun fact. That's, again, this isn't about the movie, this is just me working through parental trauma apparently.
But it's because she had her own business. So
it's because she had her own business and she thought that
no time for Bratz dolls.
I was gonna say that it's really just that she slut shamed them and was like, you can't have those. Like, literally. And I'm like, oh my god, okay, whatever.
She's like, what are their jobs?
What are their aspirations? Do they have pants that go a little bit longer, perhaps?
Do they have a 401k?
Do they have a 401k? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So Knives Out. I've never really considered myself to be much of a whodunit person, but first off, I love a stacked cast, as I like to say. This movie has everything. You've got Michael Shannon. You have Toni Collette giving you, like, hippy-dippy mama. We love that for her. You've got Christopher Plummer in one of his final roles, Rest in Paradise King. You have Daniel Craig giving you Southern gentleman fake realness. It's incredible. Yeah. It's got such a fantastic cast. It's got the girl from 13 Reasons Why. It has one of the kids from It. It has fucking Jamie Lee Curtis and Don Johnson. Like, it's got fucking Chris Evans. This is like a murderer's row of like fantastic white people. It's great. Yeah. These people are so good. They're like fucking fantastic actors and they all do such a great job. I love a stacked cast. I adore so many, like, a character-based story. I've realized with a lot of like sitcoms that I've loved, what's the thing that has, you know, all of these, like with New Girl and 30 Rock and Parks and Recreation, like all of these shows that I love, like Our Flag Means Death and What We Do in the Shadows, what does this all have in common? They're like character-based. Mm-hmm. That each person is their own little guy, just like very distinct, and the way that they look is distinct. Like Michael Shannon uses a cane for some reason, like it's never disclosed. It's just honestly, I fully believe that he just showed up to set with that and Rian Johnson was just like, okay, it just went with it. And you know what? It's fucking Michael Shannon. He's allowed to do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I adore like characters. It's a great mystery. It's got Chris Evans, like fresh off of Avengers time, being an absolute asshole in a beautiful sweater. I love that. like on top of it too, it's like, okay, this is a story about like white entitlement as opposed to actually like the care and relationship that this young woman of color, this first generation, like mom's an illegal immigrant, this person who is actually showing up for and caring about the person who did something for her, like literally gave up his life so that she could be okay. Ultimately, this is the story of like, okay, this is what that relationship that you build with somebody, you build and create like a family with someone, for better or worse, the payoff that somebody gets essentially for being there for that person, as opposed to all of these folks who just kind of show up, one, because they're supposed to, and two, because they get something out of it more than just like having a friendship, having a relationship, having a making this family with this person. It's kind of like nuts that this goofy sort of whodunit is really like about that. In such a good way. I'm sure that it's not the most nuanced way of going about it, because, you know, some film bro probably will be like, actually, you know, I think the way that this is portrayed is actually not as complicated as people make it out to be. Okay, fucking whatever. It's my turn to talk. Yeah, it's probably not the most sophisticated way to tell maybe that story, but at the same time, I do love it when movies sneak in vegetables like that. Mm-hmm. I love when something it's presenting something as something else, essentially.
Yeah.
As I like to put it, I love when shit is shaped like different shit. It's a story about like family and relationships, but it's also like a whodunit murder mystery. It's so good.
Yeah. And it gets it across to more people that way too than if it's just straightforward feeding it to you.
Yeah. If you were to take that movie, pull the two halves of it apart, like what do you get? You have something that is going to be telling this story probably kind of sanctimoniously, no offense, but you know, like you don't want something that is going to present a topic to you in a way that's like super preachy.
Yeah.
You know, that's the shit that lefty people, that's what we get, I think, a lot of the time. The big criticism is, you know, being very sanctimonious, being very up our own asses about stuff that we care about, which, you know, on one hand, it's like, mm-hmm. excuse me, I'm just passionate. And on the other hand, it's sometimes they're like, I hate to say it, sometimes like you don't want to be too preachy about it. So you don't, the same thing goes here, is like, you've got this like moral to the story. You don't want to present it in a way that's going to be too jerk off hand motion insert here. But on the other hand, if you were just presenting a murder mystery, just like, here it is, it's also like, that's not substantive.
Yeah.
Substantive, however you say it. I'm so tired. It's not going to be worth watching, because it's like, okay, thank you for giving me this fun little mystery, but what else is there? What is the point here other than like, we found who murdered him?
Right.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
You need both halves to it. You need to have your good nuance to the story. You've got to say the, you know, the important message that you're actually trying to say, but you also got to have the fun with it too, because then that makes the vegetables easier to eat.
Absolutely.
I love that movie for that. But also the fucking set decor is incredible. I was fucking furious that Knives Out didn't get any production design Oscars. Mm-hmm. I was furious.
Yeah.
Because the set of it is incredible. The costuming, everybody looks so, again, it's the character-based thing that I'm just like, yum, 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 give it to me. I love it so much. character based. Everybody looks just so distinct.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, like, you can tell what everybody's deal is just by like looking at them. And again, the goddamn sweater that Chris Evans is rocking is just so good.
Yeah.
It's great. That's why I really like Knives Out. That's not the movie again we're talking about today, but it's so good.
I think I've only seen it once, and I'm now remembering that I think I texted a friend after and described it as like basically if Wes Anderson made a murder mystery with slightly less white people than Wes Anderson usually casts.
Yeah. I mean, instead of one, you've got two.
Yeah.
That's a gripe that I do have about this movie. Then again, like if you had cast the family as anything other than white,
I don't
think it would have been.
That's the point.
Yeah, that is the point. And it's that final shot of Marta wrapped up in the blanket holding that coffee cup, which I need. I will put it on my Christmas list. I want that coffee cup so goddamn bad. But she's just holding his coffee cup, standing on the balcony, looking over these people who are just frustrated and furious. They didn't get what they felt they deserved as a result of just being around, not even around, but just like existing. That entitlement is distinctly a white thing.
Yeah.
The thing that does suck is that that is the bulk of the cast. But if they tried to be like, oh, we're going to get diverse with this, I don't think it would have been as effective.
No, it wouldn't have worked at all. But that's the thing about Wes Anderson's films is that they are 99% white, but there's no like reason for it.
No.
There's no story. There's
The only movie I think of his that makes sense for us how fucking white it is the Royal Tenenbaums, because I don't think that like Luke Wilson and Gwyneth Paltrow's characters, who are like raised as brother and sister but end up like kissing because they're not technically related to each other.
Oh no,
that shit wouldn't have happened in a person of color family. Let me just tell you.
Very true.
That is distinctly a white people thing. Thank you very much. So no. That's the only time where it's like, okay, this makes sense.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm totally with you that he should have had, I think, more people of color. Although I saw French Dispatch and I enjoyed it, but like Jeffrey Wright's character, you know, cheers to casting a person of color, Wes, because Jeffrey Wright did a fucking great job with that role. He plays a food reporter that helps to find a kidnapped child, and he's very good in it. He's also, I think his character is also supposed to be gay. So, you know, Wes is just really trying to stuff it all in with one man. He's really putting representation firmly on Jeffrey's shoulders. And I don't, that's a big responsibility to give to him. But Jeffrey Wright rocks. He's great in The Batman too. I can name maybe one or two people of color in that last movie. Everybody's too white.
Yeah.
I love Wes Anderson because I do also love, I love the aesthetic. I really do. Unfortunately, it's one of my fatal flaws. I just, you know, I love things being symmetrical. Yeah. I love things that are symmetrical. I love shit that's round, which I don't think there's a lot of round stuff, but I love the symmetry of his stuff.
Yeah. Very visually pleasing.
Very visually pleasing up until the point where it's like, why are all of these people so goddamn white?
Yes.
Why are all of these people? They don't have to be.
You don't have to be.
They don't have to be. So stop it.
You hear that, Hollywood?
Yeah. We're here to tell you what's what. Damn it.
Overall, how would you describe your relationship with movies?
I love movies. I really do. I love being a hater for a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Unfortunately, I can be a little contrarian whenever people are fucking bloviating about how Marvel movies are. I'm the first one that's very quick to jump in with like, well, did you know that Captain Marvel is just Air Force propaganda? Like, I love ruining people's good times. That being said is that like, I understand the appeal to that, you know?
Yeah.
I talk a big game for somebody who still goes and watches them because it's such a part of the cultural zeitgeist that it's almost like I have to, which sucks because I think that's the thing that they really bet on for all of those movies. It's going to make a shit ton of money because everybody is going to go see it,
right?
Because everybody's going to be talking about it and you don't want to not be part of that conversation.
Yeah.
And then enter me to ruin everybody's good time on top of that, being like, well, you know, all of this stuff is CGI and it really could have been much better if they did some practical effects, but they really fucking hate unions. Like, I'll go right in there.
Yeah.
So I love to be a hater, but I also really do love movies. When I was a kid, I loved going to the movies. I love sitting there and watching one. It's a chance to take you away from what's going on in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say that like my life has been by any stretch hard. I have been incredibly privileged to live what I call a very charmed existence. And fucking, I hope that streak keeps going on. Woo. Everybody has their own problems, you know? Everybody has things that they wish were different. Everybody wants to be a different way. And when you go to a movie that like takes you away from any of those thoughts, but at the same time reminds you about what's possible. Mm-hmm. It's very magical.
Totally.
It's very magical. It's insert Nicole Kidman's pre-AMC speech here. We come to this place. Heartbreak feels good in a place like this. It does.
Yeah.
That indescribable feeling we get when the lights begin to dim. And we go somewhere we've never been before. Not just entertained, but somehow reborn together.
Sorry, I had to take a drink of water.
Of course, hydrate.
It's just very important, especially when you're hungover. yeah, there's just something to be said about going and seeing somebody's their vision, how it comes out, and the way that people film things. Like, I didn't go to film school, which every day I regret because I think I would have fucking crushed it. But
yeah,
you know, we can't live like that. No regrets. I decided to be a communication studies major or whatever. So now I know how to talk. Great, but I can't fucking make a movie. Cool. It's so cool to see all of the technical stuff. And one of my really good friends, he went to film school. And so I love hearing all of the shit that he has to say. He's like, oh, all the media in the air. I'm like, yes, CJ, talk about all that dust. It's great. It's so cool to see the way that we have taken this art form from point to the camera to make it look like the train is coming towards the screen,
mm-hmm.
to how Inception was filmed. Like with the big tourney doodad, like how we're like, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to strap the camera. Literally the way that people are like, okay, we are going to strap this camera to this thing and make it spin and it's going to look cool.
Yeah.
That's nuts to me. That is so cool. So much of movies really is just sticking a camera and seeing what it's moving it around and seeing what it's going to do.
Yeah.
The technique that always brings me so much joy, it's that like dolly zoom in that like, I think Hitchcock was the one to have done that, of where the background looks like it's zooming away.
Yeah.
But the camera is going more into the like subject.
Yeah. I love those too. I forget what it's called, but yeah, it's some kind of dolly shot.
Yeah. It's so cool. And again, it really just comes down to, we stuck the camera on top of this thing and we're going to move it. And therefore it's going to look neat. Like,
yeah,
that's sick. I, again, and just talking about this is like, why didn't I go to film school? I would have loved it. I wouldn't have been able to get a job at all, but I would have just had such a good time.
Yeah.
So I love movies. I do.
I love movies. Gosh, I love movies.
Despite all of that, I love movies. I really love TV. I would say that I probably like TV more than I like movies.
Because
it's the attention span thing too.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about sitting down. The idea of like, okay, this is a 2-hour movie. I have to sit my ass down and watch.
Yeah.
It makes me go, but I'll sit and watch like 5 hours straight of TV.
Yeah. Well, I think it's because with movies, like movies have to be encapsulated into one sitting, and so you really can't miss a second. Like, people worked years onto this like 90 minute feature, whereas like with shows, they have space, like they can make more episodes, they could be making episodes for 20 years for all you know, so you can miss a couple seconds. You can run out for a quick bathroom break and it won't be the end of the world, you
yeah
know?
that's a good point. I think too that like it's just a lot more digestible to be like, okay, this is gonna be a 27 minute,
yeah,
this is the attention span that I have. Mm-hmm. This is here it is, okay, yeah, I guess I could watch one more. You know what? It's really, I like the illusion of choice that is involved with watching TV. I appreciate the illusion of choice. You do not have that with a movie. TV shows are great, but this is a podcast about movies, so we got to talk about movies. I love movies though. Yeah. But movies are great. They're the best. I love them.
Movies are great.
This is the space where the ads go.
everybody. I'm Amber.
And I'm Maddie.
And we're Witches Talking Tarot. And we've brought you a show all about the occult.
We're talking different lores and mythology.
Yes, creature features, cryptids, aliens, you name it, we'll cover it.
Conspiracy theories.
Absolutely.
And pagan holidays and
100%,
practices.
All eight of them. Yes.
Spiritual living, you yeah. name it.
That's right. We've got it for you. So if you want, come sit with us for a spell and let us make you laugh.
We are Witches Talking Tarot.
Thanks, everybody.
Greetings, folks. This is Daniel Cordova, your host and metal guide of the Far Beyond Metal podcast. Far Beyond Metal is a show that sets out to defy what it means to be metal by exploring the minds of the musicians, writers, and metal media staples behind the genre that is largely made up of adults growling like monsters. Is the entire show an excuse for me to talk about The Simpsons, Prince, and Cats with my metal heroes? Absolutely. But we also talk about, I don't know, guitars and new albums and stuff too. Each episode also features a guest squirming as they discuss their first band, and I recommend a new band for you to check out. It's a potpourri of metallic mayhem. You can find the show over at farbeyondmetalpodcast.com.
Hi, I'm Milk, and this is a promo for my podcast, Nymphomercial, where me and my co-host review hentai, both enthusiastically and regrettably. So if that sounds like a good time to you, find Nymphomercial wherever you get podcasts.
We shall now get into discussing our feature film, chosen by Adriana. The film we're going to be discussing is a romantic comedy drama that was released widely in the United States in 1988. Directed by Norman Jewison, it has a 94% Rotten Tomatoes approval rating, and it stayed a total of 20 weeks in the top 10 films of 1988. The film that we are talking about today is Moonstruck. Adriana, you have chosen this movie. Please give me a brief summary of your chosen movie in your own words.
This movie is about Italian Americans vibing in New York City, vibing and cheating on each other. That is the Moonstruck story. Cher is a widow in her 40s who gets engaged to her boyfriend, who her dad does not like very much, and she doesn't seem to love him. The night that he proposes to her, he says, "Hey, I want you to invite my brother to the wedding. We have not spoken in years, but it is important to me that he comes to the wedding." And then he goes off to take care of his dying mother in Sicily. Cher tries to call him up, and he is very rude to her on the phone. And so she goes down to the bakery where she meets him. The brother is, of course, played by one Nicolas Cage. Pew, pew, pew. Who is 23 in this movie and looks like he's fucking 40. It's awesome.
It is.
He is in this movie. You see him and you go, I did not know that Nicolas Cage was capable of being this sexy. Like when you first see him, he's all sweaty and he's so hairy and it's like, oh.
Yeah. Muscly tattoo.
Yeah. He's hot. Yeah. I don't care what anybody says. He's hot. He is. So she goes and she meets his hot younger brother and he is like, fuck Johnny. I hate his ass. I do not care if he wants me to be there at his wedding. He is the reason that I lost my hand and my woman left me. And Cher's basically like, you're being really fucking stupid. We need to actually just let's sit and talk about this because you're overreacting. And he's got this iconic scene where he just is shouting, I lost my hand. I lost my bride. Yeah. Johnny has his, Johnny's got his hand. Johnny has his bride. It's incredible.
Yeah.
It is truly, the word gets thrown around a lot, but it is iconic. So they go and they talk and turns out they're mad horny for each other. They spend the night together and the next morning he's like, I'm in love with you. And she's like, what the fuck? No, 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 no. Like clearly she has feelings for him too, but she's like, I'm supposed to marry your brother. And we just had sex. And his whole thing is like, well, I want to, before we have to say goodbye forever, please come with me to the opera. So they go to the opera. There she finds her dad with another woman. Her dad is cheating on her mom, who's the parents are also prominently featured in this movie. They are incredible. Vincent Gardner and Olympia Dukakis, both of which rest in power. He's cheating on her mom, who rocks, and she's of course very embarrassed about the whole thing, and she ends up spending the night again with the younger brother. His name is Ronnie. His name is Ronnie. The brother she's engaged to is named Johnny. Yep. It's not confusing at all. She spends the night again with Ronnie, and that night when both she and her dad are off at the opera, her mom goes to dinner by herself, and she meets a professor who is played by the actor who played Frasier's dad.
Yeah.
And another legend who we have lost. I cannot remember his name to save my life. John Maroney. Got it. So she runs into the professor. They discuss, of course, you know, life, love. Her big question that she's trying to answer, of course, is why do men cheat? Mm-hmm. Why do men, you know, run around on their women? The answer is ultimately answered by Johnny Camerari, the fiance, who comes by looking for Loretta, who came home because his mother recovered amazingly. Wouldn't you know it? It's a miracle. The mom's okay. She, you know, she asks Johnny, like, why do men cheat? And he's like, I think it's because they're afraid of death. And she's like, thank you. That's the answer I have been looking for.
Yeah.
So Loretta comes home the next day. She's got a hickey on her neck. Her mom, of course, is like, you've got a love bite on your neck. You need to get some makeup. You're ruining your life. What the fuck are you doing here? Like, you're get it together.
Yeah.
And so she's like, Johnny came looking for you, just to let you know. I told him to come by because you weren't home. So you better get your story straight. Ronnie, Nicolas Cage, of course, comes by too. And he's like, hey, I want to meet your parents. And she's like, no, 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 no. And he's like, oh, yes, 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 yes. And of course they meet. And, you know, it's very pleasant. He introduces himself and such. The house just basically fills up with people. It fills up with the dad comes down. And of course, you know, the mom has a good confrontation with him. Like, I want you to stop seeing her. He goes and slams his hands down on the table. He's like, fine, fine. And he's got this great line. He's like, it's a very sad day when a man realizes that his life is built on nothing. And she's like, your life is not built on nothing.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good little moment of, you know, perspective for him. Like, hey, bud, your life's not that bad.
Yeah.
You've got a really good business and you have a wife that loves you and you've got a daughter who you don't want her to marry this dude, but you know, you're doing your best. So the house just fills up. And then finally, Johnny Camerari comes around and is like, hey, Loretta, I need to talk to you about something. My mom got better and now we can't marry. We can't get married. And she's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
He now is like, no, we can't get married because if we get married, my mom's gonna die. And of course, Ronnie is sitting there like, you fucking mama's boy. Like, you always come up with, like, you always do whatever she wants you to do. Like, what's wrong with you? And
yeah.
they get into a little bit. And so she returns the ring. Ronnie turns around and is like, hey, will you marry me? And so he goes and he gets the ring back from his brother to
yeah.
put it on her finger. Forgot to mention, the brother, of course, is played by Danny Aiello, another legend that is no longer with us. This
Damn.
Movie is filled with dead people, unfortunately.
For real. Yeah.
But you know what? Cher and Nicolas Cage are still alive. Mm-hmm. So what does that say?
Still thriving.
It says a lot about society, if you ask me. So yeah, they get engaged. They all cheer. They have a little bit of champagne first thing in the morning. That's the end. It's really just a movie that's just about vibes and cheating on each other.
Yeah.
It's the best movie of all time.
That's a great summary. Tell me about the first time you watched this movie. Where were you? How old were you? Who did you watch it with? How did you respond to the movie then? And has your response changed on rewatching?
I watched this movie for the first time when I was in high school. This is my mom's favorite movie.
Mm.
So I watched it with my mom. I'm sure it was like downstairs on the couch. I think she was like, finally, my child, it is time for you to watch Moonstruck. I'd seen it like in little bits and pieces because my mom would like put it on TV like while she was like folding laundry.
Nice.
But I had never really sat down to sit and watch it. I watched it on a date with like a boyfriend that I had because I was like, I really love this movie. I want to show it to you. He's like, oh, I like that movie. I'm like, okay, great. And so we're going to go and sit. We're going to watch it. We're going to hold hands. And it was very nice. And we, to this day, are not talking to each other. We broke up a long time ago. was really nice. It's a nice little memory that I have with that.
Yeah.
But I watched it for the first time with my mom. You know, when you're a kid and you're like, everything that my parents like is stupid. Mm-hmm. I think that I initially had kind of some like, I don't want to watch this movie with my mom. I want to play on my Nintendo DS.
Yeah.
When she was like, nope, it's time. We're going to sit down. We're going to watch this movie because I love it and you're going to love it too. Okay, fine. And I remember just being so like chuffed with it. I was like, oh, this is nice. This is a good movie. Like, I enjoyed it. It was great. And really the fondness has only, it's only increased since I've watched it. I will watch it with my parents and it's like watching the fucking Rocky Horror Picture Show. And my parents can recite the lines along with the movie like every single time.
It sounds so fun.
It is incredible to watch. The most recent time that I watched this movie was my birthday this year. My birthday was on a Wednesday. It wasn't like I could really like go out and do anything. We were just like, mm-hmm. I'm just going to sit at home. It was me and my two roommates who are both boys who I would say they're not anti-romantic comedy, but it's not their thing per se. I don't think either of them had seen Moonstruck before. And I was doing the same thing my parents do, which is like saying all the words along with the movie. I follow a Moonstruck quote bot. And so it's not like I can be like, wow, I really relate to this woman's struggles. It would be insane if I could be like, I too understand what it's like to have been in a relationship with somebody who got hit by a bus and now you think that you're cursed. And so instead of really embracing the stuff that makes life worth living, you just play it safe and you just get married to the dude who asks you because he's right there. And,
yeah.
You know, this isn't going to happen again, but we got to make sure it happens right. It's so yeah, I'm like 16 and my biggest problem is like I'm not doing great in math. That's the position I'm coming right from watching this movie. It just was like, this is so deeply charming. It's just such a nice movie, despite the fact it's about cheating on people. It's so delightful. It just makes me want to be Italian so bad. It's really ultimately great because it was a nice bonding experience that I had with my mom. It wasn't like weird and traumatizing or anything. It was just like, this is delightful. And then a couple of years later, when I was like having some really bad death anxiety, my mom was like, this is now it's time for you to watch Ghost. And I was like, you really think this is now the time? Like, that's the that's an equivalent kind of experience, but like the darkest version of that.
Yeah. Did it work?
Yeah. I'm like, my mental health is not doing great. And you're like, my child is terrified of death right now. Let's watch a movie where the whole thing gets set into motion because Patrick Swayze gets shot. That'll teach her. She'll be fine after this. Ghost does rule though. That's also a really good movie. The heterosexuals be winning with that one. It's pretty good. The clay scene that everybody makes fun of is actually deeply sexy.
Yeah.
But it's not the movie that we're talking about here today. We're talking about Moonstruck. That is my first initial experience with Moonstruck. And I've experienced this movie so many times beyond that.
I love it. I love it that it started out as like this mother-daughter bonding thing that could have gone poorly, but she had enough of a sense of who you were to know that you would actually like it. Or she just assumed like everyone in the world loves this movie.
I really think that it was kind of just like, I love this movie. You have to watch it now. I would do the same thing if I had a daughter that age. I'd be like, all right, it's time for you to watch this. She'd be like, Mom, I want to play on my Nintendo. Nope. Sit your ass down. We're watching this.
I don't know if I'll ever have kids, but I definitely would have movies for every like year of their life to be like, okay, they're 10. Now they can watch this. They're 15. Now they can watch this.
It came down to me being old enough where my mom felt like this was okay. My mom is pretty Catholic, I would say. Like, I'm going to say fairly Catholic.
Interesting.
She, I don't think, wanted to expose me to anything too horny too early, which has had an interesting effect on my life. It's a little bit of a slingshot effect, I think. Again, this is not a podcast about this.
I mean, it is a little bit.
I mean, sure.
This feels like a very horny movie to me, though. So I think that's interesting.
That's the thing, is that she didn't want me to watch fairly horny movie till she thought, like, okay, this is an okay time to show a fairly horny movie. And there is not that much stuff in this movie that makes it too inappropriate, I would say. The most inappropriate thing in this movie is the concept of adultery and Nicolas Cage bellowing son of a bitch before he's about to fuck Cher.
I think I would say something that would be disturbing for kids is probably when he's threatening to kill himself.
Yeah, I would say so. But I was also a very dramatic child and I don't think it would have affected me.
Got it.
Because he's absolutely in that scene. He's shouting that for the most dramatic effect. This man, Ronnie Camerari, is a messy bitch who lives for drama 100% of the time.
Yeah.
He's absolutely doing it for the theater of it all. The man loves the opera. What's more theatrical than that? That could be a little scary, I think, for like somebody who's too young or somebody who might be sensitive to that sort of thing, which I think is completely legit. I'm not about to discount anybody's experience, obviously not, but just to shout, Chrissy, bring me the big knife, like, yeah, I'm gonna slit my throat. It's so fucking over the top. And I think it really could only have been pulled off by one Nicolas Cage,
mm-hmm,
who's again so good in this movie. And yeah, it's very deeply sexy in this film.
Yeah.
I am not afraid if that's going to get me canceled. Let the woke mob come for me. I don't care. You can't silence me. Free speech. Nicolas Cage is sexy and Moonstruck.
I'll make the promo for this episode just that shot of like his shoulders working on the ovens.
Oh my God. It's either that or you have to get the part where Cher looks very pretty. I think another reason why I do love this movie is because I unfortunately, another toxic trait of mine is that I love a makeover movie.
Oh yeah.
I don't think that the ethos behind those is super great because people are much more than their appearances. Yes. But I do love seeing a gal being taken from drab to fab. It's one of the reasons I love The Princess Diaries so much. She was great before, but you know what? Sometimes, you know, you feel more confident when you get a bit of a tune up. It's great.
Yeah. Well, with this movie also, like, he already chose her the way she looked before. And
that's
so
true.
When she gets all dolled up to go to the opera with him, it more feels like the movie's saying she's choosing herself, because she's also choosing the man who says he loves her and is being like romantic and passionate, as opposed to the man who's like lukewarm and couldn't even get on his knees and didn't buy her a ring or anything.
Yes.
So it's sort of like she's choosing herself, and in doing that, she's like, you know what, maybe I'll put on some lipstick and dye my hair, which is very different than like, you have to look a certain way in order to reel in the man.
That is a very good point. Yeah, it's very much a moment of like, I am taking this very scary risk and I'm just going to go full in. I'm going to go full
embrace
in.
Embrace who
Fuck
she
it.
Is in that moment.
Embrace it. Just do it.
Yeah.
Why not? Why not feel good about yourself?
Yeah.
You're doing something that only feels good right now. It's not right, but it only feels good right now. Fuck it. Go all in. Yeah. Do it for yourself, Loretta. She doesn't. She looks great.
Mm-hmm.
Let's keep in mind, it's also Cher, who's like one of the most beautiful women in the world.
Yeah.
Just looking fantastic with just hair goals of like this, especially after she gets it all done, but like beautiful, thick, curly hair. Looking great in this dress.
Yeah, that dress is great.
The dress is awesome. The fact that she like kind of walks past it, steps back, takes another look, and then fucking buys that shit. Yes, go for it. Who cares? It's great. It's fantastic. She looks like hotter than ever. Nicolas Cage looks hotter than ever. It's definitely sexy. It's for sure like a horny movie without being like too explicit. Like you don't see anybody fuck. You just see like a very passionate kiss after mm-hmm. they've been yelling at each other, which feels the most Italian thing in the world. Again, every day I wish that I was Italian. I got very upset when I was a kid. We had to do this like genealogy project. I think it was in first grade. And I remember my mom telling me like, okay, well, you know, on my side you're Mexican, and then on dad's side you're this, which is all just white. It's like, oh, you're English and you're Irish and you're German. And then I was like, but what about Italian? And my mom's like, well, honey, you're not Italian. Nobody in our family is Italian. And I like started to cry because I was like, I want to be Italian. So if anybody out there is very in love with me that is Italian and is also like hot enough for me to want to kiss back. Somebody who I'm like, you're great and you think I'm great, let's get married or whatever, and you're Italian.
Any basement bread bakers.
If you're a bread baker who's related to Nicolas Cage, get at me. Please and thank you. Because that means also that you're related to one of the Coppolas, which is pretty fucking cool. And I will take somebody who's not even on the Coppola side. I'm not that much of a fame whore. It doesn't really matter. I just want to be Italian. That's really what it comes down to. I wanted to be Italian so much when I was a kid. And then I watched Moonstruck. And every single time I'm like, I wish I was Italian.
did your desire to be Italian start with Moonstruck or did it precede it?
Oh, it preceded it. It was because... Yeah, well, when I was a kid, when I was little, spaghetti was my favorite food. I loved Italian food so much when I was younger. And like, I was just like, what do you mean we're not Italian? We make Italian food all the time. That's the food that I think my parents, you know, as somebody who is Mexican American, like I think a lot of people, I think automatically assume that we would just eat a lot of Mexican food. No, we ate it. Like Italian food, I think is the most common thing that my parents make. I think really what it comes down to is that it's pretty easy with two parents that work. You know, you're gonna probably make pasta and like salad. Like that's,
oh yeah,
I love cooking, I love Italian food, I love Moonstruck. Again, if anybody wants to get married, just let me know.
So other than further cementing your deep desire to be Italian, how did this movie change or affect your life?
It created, I think, another thing for me to bond over with both my mom and my dad. I've always been really close with my mom. My mom is, as I've said, is like my favorite person like in the world. We talk all the time.
Love to see it.
Yeah, it's really nice because not everybody has that. My mom and her mom were close but had a very different relationship. I think that it was like a closeness that developed out of necessity, especially as my grandmother got older. And she needed my mom to take care of her. It's not to say that they didn't love each other very much, but when you're working, your focus, I think, can get taken away from your family.
Yeah.
This is not an advocacy for trad values. I want to put that out there before I continue.
No, it's an advocacy against capitalism.
It is.
Let parents be with their kids.
Let parents be with their kids, but no trad. Promise. Fuck that. My grandparents had to work really hard and weren't super close with my mom as a result. She was also the youngest kid, and all of the kids had like really big age gaps. My mom's oldest sister, 13 years older than she was. So it's a really big age difference. And she was really the one that ended up raising my mom. And my grandma wasn't a very like lovey-dovey kind of person. Shout out to any Mexicans out there with emotionally withholding grandmothers. Because that's something we don't talk about, I think, enough. Where's that representation? Everybody wants to portray like the Mexican family as being very close and very loving. And I'm like, we're close, but that second one. Not everybody's super warm all the time, just to let you know.
Not Mexican representation, but Encanto, at least.
Oh, yeah.
Complicated Latina family.
That's true. That is true. The ways in which we are connected is that we have grandmothers that are withholding. This isn't an opportunity for me to dunk on my grandmother. I loved her very much. She passed away a couple of years ago, and I think about her all the time.
Rest in peace.
She was awesome, but she just wasn't. She and my mom had a different relationship that I have with my mom.
And I would say, just like with movies, I think that you can really show more love for a movie by also recognizing its flaws or ways it could have been better. And it doesn't diminish the love that you have for them. It just means that you see all of them and you are actually enjoying the whole truth of the film or the person.
Yeah. I completely agree with that too, with movies. I think that in the defense of being a hater, that's the ethos of that, is that like you can recognize when it's like, hey, you know what? You're definitely not perfect, but you can still appreciate. We all have our problematic faves. Mine happens to be my grandmother, but you know, you can have a different one. Like, you know, any James Bond movie, he's not super good to women. Mine's just my grandma. my grandma did rock, but she and my mom had a very different relationship than the kind that me and my mom have. And so it's just something that like further helps us cement that bond. And my dad loves it too. And you know, I'm not as close with my dad, but it's always really nice to have this thing where the three of us, and you know, if my brother wants to watch it, he's welcome to too. He's just like, oh, I'm just gonna go play video games. Like, okay, bye. It's really nice to have this thing that really bonds us together. It rocks. Aside from just that, of me just being like, family stuff, bleh, let me just dump that onto the listener. Enjoy. I love that at the beginning of this, I was like, I don't want anybody to know anything about me. And now I'm like, okay, here's the deal with me and my mom.
Just as I planned.
Perfect. It's fine. She's not going to listen to this. It's fine. No, I mean, if you edit all of that out, sorry, you don't have a podcast anymore. That would be bad. Right.
I don't think you said anything bad. I mean, that's just me. I think it's all been very flattering.
I don't think so either. I think the worst thing that I've said so far is my mom didn't want me to watch horny stuff. She's very Catholic. But she would hear that and she'd be like, yeah. So. So the other thing I think that really affected this is like, ultimately, this is like a movie about love. This is a movie about taking a chance on love and appreciating the love that you have in your life. And I think that's really significant. I think it says it in a way that not a lot of other movies really say out loud, because I think about the speech that Nicolas Cage makes after they go to the opera and, you know, shares like, I'm really cold. I don't want to go back inside. Like, you took me to your apartment and I told you that we weren't going to do this again. But he's like, dude, I know that you want to. I know that you want to. Where he's like, Loretta, I love you. Not like they told you love is. And I didn't know this either, but love don't make things nice. It ruins everything. It breaks your heart. It makes things a mess. We aren't here to make things perfect. Snowflakes are perfect. The stars are perfect. Not us. Not us. We are here to ruin ourselves and break our hearts and love the wrong people and die. The storybooks are bullshit. Now I want you to come upstairs with me and get in my bed. It's incredible. It's incredible. But that is exactly it. We don't talk about how fucking messy love is, and I think a really true, meaningful way. I think a lot of movies out there try to portray it, but I think that it's such a, unfortunately, it's a very shallow interpretation of what this means, that I don't think that there are enough movies that are saying this out loud and passionately, of just being like, all of this shit doesn't make sense. None of this makes sense. It's never going to make sense. And it's just going to make things terrible. Like, the only thing that I can think of right now off the top of my head that like says anything like this is series finale of Fleabag.
Oh yeah.
Andrew Scott's character, the priest, is just like, love is awful. It's terrible. Because it is. I have only had the opportunity to be in love once. Hopefully it's going to happen again. I would really love it if it did. Again, if you are Italian and or Jewish, please hit me up. We can make a terrible mess together if you're interested. It's fucking awful. It's terrible. It makes you an insane person. Nothing makes sense. Time is a joke. Hell might be real. Hell might not be real. We don't know the answer to any of these things. But the thing that we do know is that love exists. Love is real. No matter how many times that I, single, watching all my relationship friends be very much in love and go like, like, this is never going to happen to me. It is real. And it's the shit that does make sense. It doesn't make sense. And it does make sense all at the same time. And Moonstruck is like the one movie that like really nails that. You can be so precise with your life and your husband can get hit by a bus. You can try to make it work as best as you can with both logic and superstition. I have it figured out. And then a day after you get engaged, you meet your fiance's brother who's got one hand and is screaming that he's going to kill himself. And before you know it, you have found the love of your life. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense, but it's incredible. And then you're just going to go to the opera and you're going to have sex. And then eventually you have to explain to your mom about why you have a hickey on your neck. You were saying every movie, it's important to, if you love a movie, you can recognize the flaws in it. This movie has no flaws. This is a perfect movie. It's got a 94 on Rotten Tomatoes and it came out nearly 40 years ago. It came out 35 years ago. It's a perfect film. I don't care. I don't care what anybody says. It's perfect. There are plenty of movies that say a lot of good things about love. When Harry Met Sally, for example, that's a pitch perfect romantic comedy. Again, too many white people, but whatever. so not perfect. It is a great way of talking about love when it comes to a person really knowing about you. That is wonderful. It doesn't touch on how messy it is because it doesn't have to. That's not the point of that. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of movies that have really great things to say about love, and this one has so many wonderful and awful things to say about it. But it's like, hey, also, you know what? Be appreciative of the love that you do have in your life, because even though that's still not perfect and you might go and try and ruin your life, or you think that it has ruined your life. Of course, I'm talking about the relationship between the mom and the dad. You can think that, oh, this has ruined everything. Oh, my life isn't going perfect. No, stop. Take a second. Smell the roses that are inside the house. Enjoy the roses that are in your yard, because maybe they might not be the biggest. They might not be the right color that you want. But if you take a second and you smell how sweet they are, you're going to realize, wow, this is pretty great. You get to fucking appreciate the shit that you have in your life.
Yeah.
It's a great movie about life. It's also wonderful to see a movie where the stakes are pretty fucking low. I really do like looking at the banality of life and being like, okay, what can we say here?
Definitely a very unique film in general. It's very unique. And then within the genre of rom-com, a very unique romantic comedy. And for that, I thank you for showing it to me. And thank you for sharing all of your thoughts and insights and experiences of this movie. This has been a really fun and wonderful discussion.
Good. I'm glad that you, thank you for saying that. I'm glad that you had me here. I feel like I talked so much.
No, it's perfect.
We got to fill up that space in the podcast somehow.
Yeah. I knew from like your tweets that you were a fan of movies, but you're like even more passionate than I expected. And I love that. Like, I'm really stoked.
Thank you. Thank you. I love movies, and the stuff that I love a lot. And I love Moonstruck. So I love this movie a lot.
Well, thanks again so much for being on. If people would like to follow you online, especially if they're Italian, where can people find you?
Any Italians are welcome in my DMs at whatever time. If you like the demented little things that come out of my mouth, the awful little noises and the terrible ideas that I have, you can follow me on Twitter at Senator Adriana. That's Adriana with two N's. And if you want to follow me on Instagram, you can follow me at Chancla Gladiator. That's Chancla Gladiator, like the movie with, I think it's Russell Crowe.
Movie references. Keep them coming.
I got them all. I've never seen Gladiator, but I'll still keep them coming. But yes, thank you again for having me on. This was so much fun.
Yeah, this is super fun. Thank you for being on.
Yeah.